The Mittler Rebbe hated money. The Mittler Rebbe didn't even know what a Tzuris Matbeah looked like. He didn't know what one coin from the other. When people would come to ask for a handout, he would show them a pile of coins and bills and say, here, pick out a good one. The Mittler Rebbe had nothing to do with money. The Rebbe says, you know what? The Rebbe says, the ultimate in Kama Sechel L'Shem Shemayim, the ultimate in Kol Drachecha Da'eu, is not when you don't like money. No. When you love money, you want it, you like it, you care about it. And you take that and you use it to serve God. Not the way most people think. That most people, they like their money, so they want to figure out a way to buy God off that'll give them more. So I'll buy him off with a tenth, I'll buy him off with a fifth, I'll make him this promise, I'll make him that promise, as long as I get what I want. No, that's not what the Rebbe's talking about. The Rebbe's talking about, that's a person who godliness and my life are two separate worlds. So the question is, how much do I have to pay to God in order for him to give me my life that I want? In order to be able to live my life separate from him, how much do I have to pay him off with? How much do I have to buy him off to make him happy? Never forget. You love money. Chase it. Pursue it. And use it to serve God. Chase it because you like it. Chase it because you want it. And you know what you should use it for? To serve God. To reveal godliness in the world. You love your wife. You love your kids. Good. Teach your wife and kids to devote their lives to godliness because you love them. Not to be so spiritual that, who cares if the wife and kids are screaming and this and that. I'm involved in my spiritual life. No, you're a physical being with a physical life. You have likes, you have desires, you have loves, okay, good. Pursue them. And transform them into godliness. Because godliness is your whole life. So your desire for physical things should also have to become godly. The Rebbe wants that you shouldn't have to cut a person open to see chassidus. The Mittler Rebbe, if you cut open his finger, you wouldn't see blood, you would see chassidus. The Rebbe wants that you shouldn't have to cut. That you shouldn't have to look inside to see chassidus. That you look at a chassid and you see chassidus. Without cutting. You look at a chassid, you see Mashiach, without cutting, without digging deeper, without probing, without pushing, without clutching. You see a chassid, you see godliness. No more cutting. You have to cut when you're talking about something that's on the inside, but not on the outside, because the inside and the outside are two different worlds. That has to. We're finished with that. The outside has to be the exact same as the inside. The job of your chutzah, my nesech, and chutzah is finished when you can't tell the difference between my nesech and chutzah. When there's no inside and an outside, everything, wherever you look, there's godliness. That's God. That's godliness. Well, what out? There's no out. What outside? There's not an outside and an inside, and you have to bring the inside to the outside and the outside to the inside. And there's not supposed to be any more insides than outsides. The whole concept of Golos, the whole concept of suffering, the whole concept of crushing, the whole concept of Jews being put through suffering, when a Jew, who's the whole purpose of creation, where does suffering have to do with a Jew? The whole concept of suffering and struggling and difficulty and oppression is only when there's something on the inside that's being concealed by the outside. When you have oil in an olive, and you're trying to get the oil out of the olive, so you have to crush the olive. So the Alter Rebbe said that the Yutes Kislev, the Rebbe Rashab said about Yutes Kislev, that it's like the idea of an olive. When you crush it, the oil comes out. The more you crush, so the Alter Rebbe allowed himself to be crushed, so the oil should come out. But once you crushed already, and the oil is out, and you fry something in that oil, when you fry something in that oil, the whole thing becomes oily. The oil goes through and through. There's no part of it that's not oily. So you want oil? You don't have to squeeze. You don't have to crush. It's there. It's through and through. So the whole point of the fact that there were arrests and there were redemptions, all these things were only because there's something still left on the inside that's not on the outside. And you have to crush in order to get it out. But once it's out, so crushing is completely unnecessary. So the Rebbe is telling us that Golos, we have reached a point where Golos is completely superfluous. There is nothing more to be found on the inside than on the outside. So there's no need for suffering and persecution and oppression and crushing, and no need for all this in any area of life. Unless you insist on making a distinction between your inside and your outside. If we decide to go backwards, we decide, no, I want a difference between my inside and my outside. I want two lives. I want my life of being a chassid and learning chassidus and davening. I want that. I want that life. I have nothing against it. It's a very important part of my life. I want to be a chassid. And I want my spiritual life. I want to go to shiurim, and I want to go to fabrengens, and I want to be a chassid. But I also want to have a life. I want two separate lives. Chassid. And then there's my life, the things I like to do, the things that I enjoy, the things that I want to do for myself. So that means we're deciding that our inside should be different than our outside. You want to have two lives. You want an inside life, you want an outside life. So, the whole reform movement, what did the reform movement start with? The reform movement started with someone who came along with a brilliant concept. Be a Jew on the inside and a guy on the outside. That was his idea. Be a practicing Jew fully in your privacy of your own home. When you go out into the world, act like everybody else. That's it. That is the antithesis. That is the direct enemy of Chassidus. What Chassidus came to do and what Reform came to do are diametrically opposed. So the tremendous battle of the Tzemach Tzedek, of the Rabbein with the Maskilim, was not just, it just so happened that they had to go through the Maskilim. Every movement, every ism, starting from there, all have the same thing in mind. Be one thing on the inside and another thing on the outside. You can go to the most secular Israeli in the world, and you could tell the secular Zionist in the world, tell them, you're not a Jew, they'll kill you. What do you mean I'm not a Jew? I'm not a Jew. Of course I'm a Jew. You guys think that a Jew is things that you do on the outside. A Jew is inside. And I'm a Jew. Maybe my kids aren't, maybe my grandchildren aren't, but I'm a Jew. Anybody, there's no such thing as a Jew that you meet that's going to tell you that inside I'm a Jew. And we do the exact same thing. Inside I'm a chassid, inside I'm a Mashiach, inside I'm godliness. Outside, I have to have a life too. You have to deal with the world. You can't deal with the world the same way you deal with yourself. You can't deal with the outside the same way you deal with the inside. Because there's a difference. Inside is inside and outside is outside. That's goals. The whole, not even that. The Torah says in many places, the Torah makes distinctions between inside and outside. It's not just that the Yetzirah makes distinctions between inside and outside. The Torah makes distinctions between inside and outside. The Torah brings the story of a certain Tana that was sitting and learning in the street. So the Gemara asked, how could he learn in the street? He was sitting and learning in the street. So the Gemara asked, how could he learn in the street? Didn't we learn that Rebbe says that Divrei Torah are supposed to be inside? So the Gemara answers that he went to the market to do business and he ended up sitting and learning. So that's why he's in the street. That's why he was in the market learning. But the Gemara asks, you're not allowed to learn, you're not allowed to park yourself in the street with and sit down and learn. There's a difference between inside and outside. Divrei Torah belong inside. And yet we find that when Rabbi Akiva saw that the Romans made a decree against learning Torah, what did he do? He went and he taught the Torah outside. Why did he go teach the Torah outside to us, publicly, in the street? Because even when Torah is inside, the ultimate tachlis is that the Torah should end up being everywhere. There should be no outside. As long as there's an inside and an outside, Torah belongs inside, not outside. But when this gzera, when I see that the world is trying to oppose the Torah on the inside, it must be proof that it's time to bring the Torah outside. Because if I get squeezed, it's only for something to come out. That now we're ready to bring the Torah outside. But when you come to the point where there is no outside, there's no inside and there's no outside, everything's inside. The job, the way that, in the Arizal's terminology, our job with this world is to make the whole world a Rishus HaYachid. That the world is a Rishus HaRabim, a public domain. And holiness is only to be found in certain places. The shul, the Beis Medrash, the Beis Hamikdash, there's places where holiness is to be found. But the rest of the world is a public domain. It's not God's private house. There's things that are God's private domain, there's things that's public domain. Our job is to make the whole world one private domain for God. So it's all inside. There's no inside and outside. So in every area of life, in every area that we're struggling with today, if a person would sit down and realize that there's only one issue that we're struggling with, it all boils down to one issue. Is there such a thing as an outside? That's the whole issue. And if there is, then there's a difference between inside and outside. Right, so the Rebbe says that's already been accomplished, and therefore the Mashiach already has to come. That means there's no more chutz. But the problem is that we're living in, we're maintaining a chutz. Because we still look at it as chutz. I still keep parts of myself outside of the realm of Torah, of Chassidus, of Kedusha, of godliness. And I still look at the world as parts of it are outside of the realm of Chassidus and Torah and Kedusha and godliness. And therefore, when I'm here, I have to talk like this, and when I'm there, I have to talk like that. When I'm here, I could say this, and when I'm here, this. When I'm here, I could dress this way. When I'm out there, I have to dress that way. When I'm here, I have to make adjustments, because there's difference between inside and outside. And I have to adjust for those differences. When you talk to a frum yid about the Rebbe's approach to the situation in Eretz Yisrael, so you show him, the Rebbe says it's a Rashi. The Rashi that God gave the individual to the Jewish people, he can take it away from whoever he wants, he can give it to whoever he wants. And in fact, he wrote the whole first Sefer in the Torah and the beginning of the second Sefer in the Torah just to make that point. Just in order to verify, to put a stamp on that gift of Eretz Yisrael to Jewish people. So that when the nations come, we'll have what to answer them. And obviously that doesn't mean in a time after the Gula is already here and Mashiach already won all his battles, because I don't have to answer them. Okay? It's not when I'm going to answer them in a philosophical debate. It means when it's going to be very practical. There's going to come a time when we're going to be standing and arguing with the Umma Salem, who does this belong to? And that time is no. He says, no, that's not what it means. He looks at the same Rashi, not denying the Rashi, that's not what it means. Rashi speaking, Alpitera. Rashi doesn't actually mean that you're going to come into the UN and tell the guy that this. Rashi means that in concept it belongs to us. In concept, our answer to the nations of the world. It doesn't mean that you one day going to sit and tell the nations of the world this. It doesn't actually mean, hello, nations of the world, it belongs to us because God gave it to us. It's not practical. So there's the Rashi, the way you learn it inside, in the Beis Medrash, by your Shabbos table, with your Cholent and your Kugel and your Zmiris. There's one Rashi. Then it's the real world. It's the real world. You don't learn Rashi that way. Because there's a difference between the inside and the out.
The poor slob that has to go to work every day to sell cars, right? This guy, Schmobegel, he goes to work every day, he sells cars. So he's living Taka, his inside, his outside, there's no outside, there's no inside, it's only outside by him. So what does this guy look like?
No outside.
My question is, in the reality of your living your everyday life, Mamish and Gullis for the moment. Chazal Shalom, it shouldn't go on another moment, but what is this guy Pashit? How does he act?
There's a certain...
He's got to relate to all these other people. Lor Mamish, you know what they are. They're...
A number of years ago, that ever called in.
Yeah.
A certain Bachra. I'm responding to you.
Yeah.
A number of years ago, that ever called in a certain Bachra that in his time was considered the Chassidus Rebbe in 77. He had just gotten married. He was an Israeli boy that came here. And he was mamish looked up to by all his fellow Shiva Bachram in Eretz Yisrael, and so too in America. Anything that was going on, he was making it happen. He was a military action when it came to any good thing that was happening. And Bachram really, really looked up to him. Younger Bachram would confide in him and come to him for advice and guidance. When he came into the Rebbe for by his chasna, for the chiddush, the Rebbe told him he should look into diamonds. You can imagine the guy that's the top guy in Kfar Chabad in 770, and he's the pride and joy of everyone looks up to him, and they're learning, and traveling, and Zavedit Hashem. He's considered a spitz chasidus shabbat. Comes into the Rebbe says, you're looking to diamonds. The diamonds. Anyway, he was totally devastated. The Rebbe wants him to look at the diamonds. It was like, there was no question that this person was going to be a shliach. And here the Rebbe is telling him to look at the diamonds. It turned out that the Rebbe wanted him to go on shlichus to Antwerp. And there in Antwerp, the main business is diamonds, and a very high percentage of the people there are very wealthy. And the Rebbe knew that if he was going to have an influence and an impact on the Jewish community in Antwerp, if he would come as someone with his hand out, raising money, he would not be able to meet these people on level ground. Would not be able to meet these people on their turf, on their terms, and he wouldn't be able to command their respect and have the influence on them that he would have to have. So the Rebbe told him that in order to be a shliach in Belgium, in order to be a shliach in Belgium and be able to be successful on influencing the Belgian Jewry, you have to be able to establish yourself as one of their peers. Not as another rabbi with his hand out. Because Belgium is a center, all the rabbis with their hands out pass through Belgium. If you really want to be able to impact on them and influence them, you have to be able to meet them on their terms. So I want to ask you a question. This guy's a diamond merchant. This guy's in the diamond business. He goes to work every day, he goes to the diamond center. But he's not in the diamond business, he was never in the diamond business. He's a shliach. He's a shliach that in order to be able to do a shlichus, he's in the diamond business. But his whole business is a shlichus, not his diamonds. Or at least that's what the Rebbe wants for him. Whatever degree of success he has, is his business. But what does the Rebbe want? The Rebbe wanted to make a diamond merchant. The Rebbe wanted to make a shliach. So a person can be involved in anything. If I look at my Yiddishkeit as, so, if I have two lives, there's my real life, and then there's my spiritual life. So if I have two lives, so then my selling cars is my real life. So in my real life, I act like car salesman act. My spiritual, I also have it in order to enrich and an extra dimension of fulfillment and satisfaction and rewarding spirituality and blah blah blah, I also have a spiritual life. In my spiritual life I'll behave in a different way. If there is no inside and there is no outside, so what am I? Then my whole metzius is what? My whole metzius is godliness. My whole metzius is my shlichus. That's my whole metzius. The Rebbe says what? The Rebbe says Mashiach is shliach plus 10. What's shliach plus 10 is the 10 faculties of the soul. My whole metzius. That Mashiach is when my whole metzius is shlichus. That's Mashiach. But shlichus means being involved in the physical world, being involved in physical activities, doing physical things, relating with people on a physical level. And all of that is a shlichus. All of that should be godliness. So when I don't have two lives, when I don't have an inside and an outside, when everything is God, that's it. Godliness is everything. And everything is godliness. So there's no need for crushing. There's no need for cutting open fingers, God forbid. And there's no need for, you don't have to, there's no need for any of this stuff that are symptoms of, that are symptomatic of gullus. Gullus is completely irrelevant. It's completely superfluous. There's no reason for it to exist. Today, there's absolutely no reason for gullus to exist. It's not, people think that when the Rebbe would say these things, there's no reason for gullus to exist. The Rebbe's talking on some deep level, and the Rebbe is relating on spiritual realms, and the angels are coming out to fight, and the Rebbe is the spiritual gladiator that's cutting down the prosecuting angels, and he's... Maybe, I don't know. What, I didn't see that, I have no idea. But what does it have to do with me? What the Rebbe is saying is, I'm telling you, for you, in your life, gullus is completely superfluous. Choose gula! Why are you choosing gullus? Choose gula! The Rebbe said by Fabregans, you didn't go out of gullus. What does that mean? What does that mean? I can translate the words, I can explain to them. What does that mean? To stand in front of a crowd of Hasidim, the Rebbe just screamed, you didn't get out of some gullus, go out of gullus. What does that mean? It's meaningless. No. What is it? It's nothing. Words. It's a couple of words strung together which have absolutely no practical meaning for me in my life. What do you mean, go out of gullus? Where am I going? Where should I go? What should I do? I should move out of my house. I should go to my local rent-a-cloud. Where should I go? What do you mean, go out of gullus? What should I do? We're living in a time where you could walk out of gullus. That's exactly it. Gullus is optional. Gullus is voluntary. It's up to you. You have insides and you have outsides and you have, so you have to go. You can only be in a prison, you can only be locked in prison if there's a wall separating you from here and there. If there's a wall locking you inside and preventing you from going outside. That's what a prison is. So the Alter Rebbe went to prison, which represented the fact that there were forces trying to keep the teachings of the Alter Rebbe inside, that it shouldn't go outside. Geula was that the Alter Rebbe broke out of prison, which meant that the teachings of the Alter Rebbe can now leave the inside and go to the outside. And the Mittler Rebbe did the same thing. The Mittler Rebbe was trying to bring that Chassidus as reality should be able to break out and become the reality outside. And you should be able to bring Chassidus as a reality to the whole world. So there are forces that are opposing that. So is it going to jail? And then you're out of jail means that those forces that are opposing have been cast away, and now you can go outside with your message. The Friedrich Rebbe is locked in prison because his message is that you could spread Torah and Yiddishkeit anywhere. So there are forces that are trying to keep that locked inside. They know there's places you can go with Torah and Yiddishkeit. So the Friedrich Rebbe gets locked in and then he breaks out. And now Torah Mitzvahs can't go anywhere. You can spread the Yiddishkeit anywhere. So we did all the Chagagulas. We did that already. There is nothing that can go anywhere. But who made everything go everywhere? The Rebbe. Who actually took all the things that could go in all the places and actually sent people and said, here, you, take the teachings of the Alter Rebbe and the Mittler Rebbe and the Tzemach Tzedek and the Rebbe Marash and the Rebbe Rasham and the Friedrich Rebbe and bring it out there. The Rebbe is the one who's actually making it happen. But the Rebbe is the one who could turn around and tell me, hello, it's finished. It's out there.
It's over. We did it. Hello? I'm the one who told you to get it out there, right? Because I know what has to be done, and I know how to do it. I'm telling you it's over. It's done. It's out there. So what am I doing out there for? If it's done, if it's over, if it's out there, why can't I come home? And then it says, there's something else that has to go out there. What has to go out there? The awareness that everything is out there. You have to make people aware. Hello. It's all out here. It's over. It's finished. The fight is over. There is no need to be one thing inside and one thing outside. It's over. It's finished. We did it. It's done. That's the message we have to tell ourselves. We have to tell people. Hello. There's no reason why you can't have a bed and pay. There's no reason why you can't have a yarmulke and give Shabbos and daven anywhere, anything, from anybody, and get only respect for it. There's no inside, there's no outside anymore, unless you make it, unless you create it. That's the message you have to tell people. Hello, it's real, it happened, it's done. It's finished. This is Gula. Gula's here. There's no more inside. There's no more outside. Yeah.
Is that a problem?
The diamond merchant that you described, so he's a competent diamond merchant. He's, you know, the people respect him, right?
He didn't start that way. He wasn't born one.
Okay, but I'm saying... Like
he started out as a Yeshiva.
Right. Gewaldige person.
Who couldn't read and write in any other language but Hebrew.
Right. Became a competent diamond merchant. You say that is real Inyan Shlichus. So what you described to me...
His diamond merchant is also Shlichus.
All right. So you described to me somebody who's, you know, can walk the walk and talk the talk to the diamond merchant. But he has an ulterior motive of... To makar everyone
there
he is. Whatever, I mean...
I don't know, tell you what. It's the only motive.
What's his reality?
It's the only motive. He's totally not interested in being a diamond merchant.
What's his experience? He calls up somebody on the phone. He's got to buy diamonds, sell diamonds. Like,
right.
What's his experience?
His experience should be that this is a schlitzer. He should feel every time he picks up the phone, every time he walks into his office, every time he... that this is a schlitzer. But I am not a diamond merchant. I am a schlitzer. That's what you should feel.
Shita. You went out there with Shlichus to the Rebbe. The first thing after you sent me out on the Rebbe, where is this idiot here? What's his name? Listen. You know what I was called in the office and he told me? You out there, you don't put someone on anybody. You know what all the Shlichus was before I went out there? You put on children, Shabbos, Kashrus, Paris Mishpacha. Nice. Not to do any of those things. I'm a shara from the Rebbe. You're to be seen. That's what Rabbi Omnik was talking about. You're to be seen. Let them see you. That's you're to be seen and be muscular. That's nothing to do with horses. What I know from horses. I know more about horses than I know about this cracker over here. I know about the cracker better. I can eat it and just it. I was my fair the waste. I got an album full of winners, and I won so many races and top class horses. My thing, I was Clemson, the Rebbe told me to do Clemson tricks, and I had to go, and I came back to the States, all I had was kapata. You know, I didn't change, they got the pay. I had trouble with the shlichim, Demet, and a lot of people all rebelled. Oh, you can't be like this, you can't go, impossible to go back there to yourself. What the Rebbe told me, come here, stay here. The whole point is, diamond merchant is an interesting problem. When I went back to Eretz Yisrael in Nun Beis, after I'd been working here since Mem Dalet, I went back and then I was to do a pool in Eretz Yisrael. They were gonna, I didn't know why they'd ever said it. 2 days later, they're going to have fun to have horse racing in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, them. They have three tracks set up. Go. I went there. They wanted me to be on the board of directors. Why? What do I have to do with my shlichus? They only race on Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. And where they were racing in the pool of it was for prizes. This is my thing. I'm in a business. And then it's supposed to be a business. So I got them to agree. Not today's Shabbos. Thursday night, though. I said, this kind of problem to tell them what it is. You want me? You have to do it my way. And they said, there was no intershite. I wasn't going to have anything to do with Shabbos. Not only they wanted me, they needed me to get it to go through because the Knesset was fighting with it. Sof Dover didn't pass through the Knesset. That's another story. When I after there, I went to the yeshiva. There was a place in Har Nov called about the Kaplan. Baruch Kaplan. So when I went there, after I've been now, I was in yeshiva before that, and there was those in Israel learning Kayla. He asked the same style as you. I went there, he said, I can't understand Gedalia. You've been out for 8-10 years training horses. Listen, you came into the yeshiva, 6 o'clock in the morning. I see you 9 o'clock at night. You're sitting, you haven't moved from one place, you're sitting and learning. Next day, you're sitting and learning. 10, 12, I could do 15, 18 hours. That's all, well, then we'll have to forbring if you don't understand. How are you doing it? So we did it. We had a forbring. I said, what's the shaila? One, Ashpiyam came. I said, you missed the point. What's giving the intershide? What was the difference between training horses and getting the learning tongue? Chalila, there'd have been a difference. Because it can't be a difference. This is the mimer we had. I mean, the thing we learned. Seeker, you're going out. What are we here to do in this world? So I tell you, no problem. I'm sitting here, the thing that, and now, after I just sitting and learning, and it's not a problem for me to sit and learn. It's no different to me than when I was out with the same horses. The horses weren't a messias by me. And if you're going to talk as Marco. There was no play. When I came back, so then everybody called me to come back. Now come on, come back, Lam Shir. And then there's many, many stories. There's a lot of stories about the whole thing. Oh, but the problem is what the Hamanik is saying. When I wanted, and that everybody wanted a certain tulip from me, and I told it every nine, I didn't want to do that. Oh, I don't know if you ever had that every yell at you, but I had that every screaming at you. Not a famine. Scream. And when he went through, you can see on the from Nun Aleph, the highlights, he talks to Nun Aleph on the video, and the Rebbe gave him a brook, and he said, tell him life in the Vimidar for the Zemidar. The horses should run in the proper way. Those can read Hebrew, they did a story, it's in Beis Mashiach this week, they translated it to Hebrew, it's a little different. It's a different story in Beis Mashiach. He got a hold of the tapes, he made it a little different, he made it into a story. So, the Rebbe wanted a certain thing from the people. So on the tape, later my wife goes by, calls her back after we give her a call back, the Oikid in the Fed, because I don't want to go to these people. I've told this story many times. I don't want to go to the wealthy, rich Jewish people that are observant, which is what the Rebbe wanted.
Okay.
Yeah. Why? Because of the opinion that we're talking about. I didn't want to go because I already know their answer. By them, it's one thing, their life, is their toilet and their mitzvahs and yeshiva, are going to do what the Rebbe said they couldn't do. That's when there's life, it's chutzah. By them, the Torah is one thing, like Rabbi Hamanik says, the Torah is one thing. And their life is another thing. So my wife went. Ha! Boy, she heard good. You've been there so many years, and not one person ever came in. And this is what the Rebbe wanted when I put that ad in the journal, even Bailey Torah. By the request of Rebbe Melech HaMashiach. It's not my request. She's kind of mine in yet. So Rebbe Shlita. Everyone told her, punk! Give our money to the yeshiva. We give the Rebbe's most studies. Bechulu, bechulu. All the things Tori misses. Hover. Horses? Shum Oifman would they do that? They couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. Why? Because there was a difference. This was this. The Rebbe says that we have a learning. Because in Gomorrah, right? Somewhere that if Hashem would have told us the Egyptians would have done it, so we would have done that. The Rebbe says this, you do that. The Rebbe said clean chimney, you clean chimney. This kind of child, but the people couldn't break. Why? That's a drop something, because that's their choice. The choice between either Golas or Geulah, Mashiach or the Chatz v'Chalila. Because it's Mamayla B'tam V'dat. They couldn't go Mamayla B'tam V'dat. And they had a different life. Their one life was Torah and Mitzvahs, and their other life is what they understood as life. So when the Rebbe asked for a certain Geulah, they couldn't do it.
Stay,
young man. No. You understand, son?
But yeah, his house is not to put on film, not do anything to show Jews that there is no outside. That's all.
No, it's like a good time.
Not to bring anything, not to say anything, not to do, just to be there. There's no inside, there's no outside. But you can be on the, you can sit and walk on the track and be able to listen and convey that message. That's the message you have to
go. Hello. Stay.
He's conveying both messages. Conveying the result.
Hey, Rabbi.
Why? Because he's being, he has a lot of opposition.
You don't understand.
He had all opposition to him. Yeah, and any time you come along and you say there's no chutzpah, you come across opposition.
So what kind of opposition they come across the problem with them? Probably 100 times. They never had any type of opposition from any of the guys in the track.
But the Jews, he did.
Because the Jews are the ones that are in charge of Golos today. The Jews are the ones that still have a choice. The guys don't have a choice. But the guy, if you got it, you tell them the Golos is over, the Golos is over. That there's no chutzah, there's no chutzah. You tell them that what their job is, don't do their job.
So you're saying that any, for example, we have a place where we have a big problem, we can't dig up from the nose. Yeah, right?
Not from the nose. I'm telling you, it's not from the
nose. That's right. This is it.
You don't have problems with that.
When I was passing out, like, those Let's Make the World a Jew, Jeff, as we find the world, it's so funny, like one of them would shake their head and I'd hand it to them and they'd be shaking their head and taking the paper at the same time. Because it's so funny.
But you can, according to what you're saying, you shouldn't even shake their head.
New Yorkers are used to refusing.
No, and then they read it, that's how I go away though.
New Yorkers are used to refusing things that people handle. They instinctively go like this.
Yeah.
I know, there were once a couple of guys standing by Mitzvah Tank.
What?
There were once a couple of guys standing by Mitzvah Tank handing out Sheva Mitzvah. So they like handed, they reached out to a Shratza lady to hand out Sheva Mitzvah. So she said, no thanks, she walked away. Then she turned back, she says, oh, is that religious literature? She came back, she took it, and she said, oh, what is this? And she talked to them. She was used to, you know, used to handing out something about, you know, the nearest car wash or the nearest whatever. A Jew is handing out something to find out about, you know.
Most of the hard ones are Jewish people. There's no, of course, 5, 6, 7 people every single day. They don't want to hear anything. They yell at someone.
This is last night. I was at a community board meeting in Hampton, Chelsea. I was trying to get okay for me to do Venera in the Union Square Park. And the whole committee was basically all unanimously for it. They're all like excited about it. At the end, there's one like lady, Jewish lady, who like she voted for it, but she said like, you know, she's a little upset because it is 8 days. You know, it's the longest. You know, it's. To set a precedent of having 8 days of an exhibit of something in a park, it's like, you know, it's... I'm not saying no, but, you know, it's just maybe we should talk to the commissioner about it first. So the one guy in the room, stood up and said, you know, if you look in the parks, look how many Kresnok trees there are, and they're all there for all those weeks long. What's wrong with having a menorah? The guy is sitting sticking up everywhere. He was saying all week long, for 3 weeks they have the tree and the wreath in that same exact park. They can't have a menorah. And anyway, it's only going to be 2 hours there. They're going to take it down afterwards. I don't understand.
When we create our own little person on a personal level, we create our personal chutzah. On a national level, we create national chutzahs.
So by doing what we, by creating our chutzah inside, we create a chutzah outside.
No, not true. Forget, the case was that chutzah was a reality. There was a real world opposing, no matter what you did. There was a world opposing and fighting and resisting. And no matter what you did, you could have done whatever you wanted. The world was out to fight you. And the only way you could fight when the youth came to Eretz Canaan, the only way you could take over Eretz Canaan was chop off people's heads. You had to fight with the world. Because the world is going to fight you back. So if you don't fight with them, you either have to go in and chop heads off.
Because they weren't on the stuff with that.
They were coming out of the Midbar.
The Apeshire could have done it in a different way. They
were coming out of the Midbar.
And because they did the Chayt, so therefore they had to go
in with. They were coming out of the Midbar, and on the level of the Midbar, the fact is that the reason they had to chop heads was because the world was not ready for them. If they would not have corrupted the world, then the time of the Eagle, then the world would have been, there would be no more opposition. But the fact is, it's true that the opposition originates in something that Jews did. But the opposition was real, you couldn't change it at that point. At that point, you couldn't do anything about it. Yeah, the Rebbe said all along that any opposition you experience on account of you can't defuse. It's in your hands. You don't have to experience the opposition.
But Mahashtik, what we do because of some other Jew in the middle of California.
Okay, even that. So to whatever degree that you can, that it's negating you in your personal avodah, then you don't have to experience.
But in your personal avodah, it was always the case.
No, it wasn't ever the case. In your personal avodah of going from the Midbar to Eretz Canaan, you had to, your personal avodah, you had to take a sword.
What's personal avodah mean?
You had to take your ticket, sword, and travel people's heads.
What's personal avodah mean?
It's in your personal shlichus of reaching every end of every situation you encounter, utilizing the situation that you're in to reveal what other is in the world. There is no such thing as a situation which you cannot turn to your undo the opposition. The fact is, from the world outside, from the non-Jewish world, from the physical reality outside, there is no such thing as an opposition that you cannot stand up to and turn to your attention. Doesn't it?
There's a level after Mashiach, right?
We're still improving. It doesn't mean it's...